May it please the court?
Yes.
Your Honor, this is a fairly straight case coming out of a real estate partition action. The trial court had a judgment. The original judgment went up on appeal to the Eastern District, and it was later dismissed. Post-judgment, after the remand to the circuit court, respondents' counsel went to the trial judge and presented a new order of sale. This was done without notice to opposing counsel at all, so we had no idea that anyone was going to approach the court. We had no idea that the court had signed a new order. Even though the order on its face says CC, attorneys of record, it was never mailed out by the court and not sent to anyone. We only found...
Your opponent argues that there's no findings of fact on any of this information that you have presented in your motion to set aside the sale, and that instead you filed a motion, but you did not call it up for hearing, so you presented no evidence. So the facts that you're relying on have not been found by a lower court. Could you address that issue?
Yes, Judge. First off, the trial court was unwilling to let us have a motion. It wasn't heard in the courtroom. We were summarily taken to chambers and denied. But the facts I'm telling the court are matters of record in the court file. They didn't require any testimony or other extrinsic evidence. These are matters in pleadings in the court file.
Well, just because something is stated in a pleading does not mean it is true.
Well, but the judgment written by the judge and the minutes sheet of the court file itself.
The reason I'm asking is because the order, you're objecting that you did not receive a copy of it, but on the face of the order it says that you did.
It said CC attorneys, but there's no notation in the court record that it was actually sent. And the standard in St. Louis County is when it's sent, the court clerks will put either certified mail receipts or some type of envelopes or something in the court file to indicate it's been sent.
And so you're saying all it says is it was ordered to be sent, but doesn't reflect that was carried out?
Correct. And the only way I actually found the order, the original order is not even in the court file. The return filed by the sheriff is where we found a copy of the order that the judge signed. The original order, I have no idea where it is. It's not in the court file, and diligent search with the court clerk and other people, it's gone.
There's nothing in the court file to reflect that notice was given to you presenting the order to the judge for signing.
Well, that respondent was going to present an order. Yes, there's something in the court file, in the minutes, in the record.
But nothing reflecting service on you of notice that was going to be done.
Oh, correct. And in fact, I think that's undisputed. I think respondent's position is yes, the order was presented to the court. Respondent's position is notice wasn't required because this isn't the type of thing that notice was required. This was a ministerial thing, similar to a garnishment or an execution. I would say that's not a good analogy. Because a garnishment or execution, you go with the court clerk or the court staff. You're not presenting something to a judge for a signature. And I think once we get into an area of, well, I'm an attorney and there's opposing counsel in a case and I'm going to the judge to seek something, is it ministerial or is it something that requires notice? I think that's an easy question for the court to set a bright line. If you're going to a judge.
And does the record reflect that this document was delivered in person and the counsel for the other side met with the judge, or is it merely that the proposed order was provided to the judge?
Well, what the record reflects in the minute sheets is it says it was presented to the court and entered. That's all it says. Whether counsel went in and had a conversation with the judge and made an argument, whether counsel dropped it off with the court clerk and said, I'm going back to my office, please give that to the judge, I have no idea. And I don't think it makes a difference.
Are you saying that this notice should have been sent, this order should have been sent by certified mail?
No, not necessarily by certified mail.
Okay, so if it's not by certified mail, then what kind of notation would a clerk put in a file other than the fact that the copy was sent to the other party?
Well, the clerk would put initials in the court file that it had been sent, that the clerk had carried out the order of the court, and that's standard. Frankly, we've moved beyond that because now we have electronic court filing, and anything that's done, we'd get an email right away if it occurred in the file, so this is unlikely to be a situation that presents itself to the court again. But historically, clerks in St. Louis County and St. Louis City, where I practice, put notations in the file when they do things carrying out orders, whether they're copies or copies of the envelopes or something to indicate, yes, it has been sent. In this case, there's nothing in the court file. The original order is not in the court file. I have no idea what happened to it. And no one at the courthouse seems to have any idea. But when a lawyer goes to a judge to have a judge do something in a case, and there's an opposing party in a case, I think it's a bright line rule. You give notice to the other party. Notice of the hearing.
Is there a requirement of a certificate of service? I mean, every document I ever filed in the office, and there's someone else in the case, a certificate of service, and I send it out to the other side.
Well, in this case, Judge, there's no certificate of service because it's not a pleading with a certificate of service. It's just a proposed order for the judge with a signature line for the judge.
And you're not suggesting the law permits you to propose an order to the judge and not send a copy to the other side?
No, we send proposed orders to judges all the time, but we notify the other side that we've sent it. That's all that we're asking for here is notify me when you're going to the court to seek relief, to obtain an order, I had a criminal case yesterday.
Irrespective of the order, is there any evidence that you or your client received actual notice of the sale?
None.
The sale was going to be?
No. And this is confusing two cases. Plant versus Plant is the main case where the sheriff did not notify the party of when the sale was going to happen. And the court held the sheriff's not required to do that. You're on notice. You can call the sheriff. You can check the court file. You can do that type of stuff. We're not claiming the sheriff did anything improper here. The sheriff gets an order from the court. The sheriff followed the rules. We're claiming before that, we didn't know that an order was going to be presented to the court. And we didn't know that the judge had signed an order. We weren't sent a copy either way. Notice that it would be presented. Notice that it had been presented. A copy of the order itself. Nothing. The first we found out is when we learned, it was sold for $10.
Are there any rules that require a proposed order to be provided to the other counsel?
There are.
I know that's a professional standard that one would assume may be done, but I'm just wondering whether this is a post-judgment. You filed an appeal. The appeal was dismissed. One would expect there would be execution on the judgment, and opposing counsel is arguing that they published notice in the paper, and that's expected to be noticed to everyone, and you just didn't look for it or see it. So what do our rules say? Because the rules you're referring to are pre-judgment rules, are they not?
No. The rule 5526 said an application to the court for an order. It doesn't say pre-judgment or post-judgment or any time in the case. It's any order at all. As long as it's civil, I suppose the criminal rules might be different. But I think if I'm going to the judge to get any type of relief, even to discuss the case, I can't do it without the other party, and certainly if I'm going to present an order I'm asking the judge to sign, I have to give notice to the other side I'm going to do that.
The Court of Appeals found that the 5526 argument hadn't been made to the trial court. What's your response?
Correct. We didn't cite the exact rule. If you did a Lexis search of the appellate brief, it wouldn't have rule 5526, but we made the argument. We said they had presented it without notice. And that the prerequisite for a lawful order to come into effect is that notice has to have been given. You're correct. At the trial court level, we didn't cite Rule 5526 and 4301 as numerically, but we cited the argument that you have to give notice of hearing and that an order has to be made in writing. The Court of Appeals just jumped right over it. The Court of Appeals, and you saw the opinion, it said the judge issued an order, and we pointed out in our application to transfer, where did that order come from? The judge didn't draft it herself. It wasn't from the prior trial on remand that it was a self-executing thing. This was a new order that had been taken to the court.
Did the order set the date of the sale?
It did not. That was the sheriff's discretion. After publication for 4 weeks, and the sheriff sets it.
So how would your client have been any better off had you gotten the notice of the order?
We would have known to have been on lookout.
But the appeal having been affirmed, why were you not already to be on the lookout for the sale?
It wasn't self-executing, and the judge would have signed something that would have gone to us that was going to the sheriff. It wouldn't have just been the sheriff walked down the hall, the judge walked down the hallway and handed it to the sheriff.
But your opponent argues that the order just merely reiterated the court's judgment in accordance with Rule 96.19.
Well, I understand they didn't.
So what more was in the order then that would apprise your client of a date and a time to be at the sale?
That it had been triggered, that the order had been signed and sent. Now we know to be on lookout for the sheriff's publication.
The sheriff doesn't get a copy of the Court of Appeals decision. That goes back to the trial court. The sheriff can't sua sponte do something. The court has to enter an order directing him
Correct.
To do so.
And had the court done so, we would have received a copy. In this case, we didn't.
Can you address the amount of the sale?
$10 for a $65,000 home. All the other cases, the value of the real estate is in question. Swift, that the Southern District looked at, all they had was an unpaid mortgage to set a value on the house. In this case, the $65,000 was argued in court and held by the judge to be the value of the house. The Court of Appeals opines, what do we know about encumbrances, liens, other things that may have been there? There were none. This house is paid off. There are no liens or encumbrances. That's not in the record. $10 for a $65,000 property, it's a sacrifice. It shocks the conscience. In this case...
Well, are you relying on cases that say inadequacy of consideration is not in itself a reason to set aside a sale, but if it's so gross in nature as to amount in itself to conclusive and decisive evidence of fraud, you cancel the transaction not because of low consideration, but because the small amount of it is an indication of fraud.
That's true. It's an indication, and it's not a loan. It, in conjunction with the way that it had been sent to the sheriff to be sold without notice to the parties at all, and a $10 sale, they're independent and they act in concert. And in this case, an owner of the property, Nina Harden, came in and said, it's not a fair price.
You, your time is up. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to start by, I guess, addressing some of the court's questions. Basically, what happened here, as you know, the court entered our partition judgment in March of 2013. Which contained an order of sale. It ordered that the sheriff sell the property in accordance with Rule 96. And so, of course, the appellant had notice of that because they filed an appeal. What happened was, there is no record, so you're relying on basically what the other attorney and I are telling you. It was not the judge forcing him to waive a hearing when he had his motion to set aside. He didn't ask for a hearing. He didn't ask for findings. He didn't request a record. And so here we are. In December.
Is there any evidence that that he received or his client received notice that the proposed order was being presented to the trial court?
No, because there's no record.
And so we don't know. Is there any record that the order once signed was sent to his client?
Only the notation, and I would disagree with Mr. Carnes about what goes or does not go into court files. Again, that's his attempt to testify in this court.
Do you agree and concede that the rules require orders of the court to be mailed to the parties?
Not in, this is not that kind of an order.
Well, what kind of order would you not mail to the parties? You say okay. They have to find out what happens in their own case by publication.
Yeah.
I've
basically
never
what happened is the mandate came down from the court. Mr. Carnes and I actually had a conversation in December of 2013. I said, you know, this house is going to get sold. Then I called the sheriff and said, you know, can we sell the house? He said, we need an order to come up.
And what's your authority that you can just go ask for the order without giving the other side notice, or the order can be issued without, and they have to find out about it by publication when they're a party? Is that how we give notice to parties?
That's how you execute on a judgment, it would be my position.
Without giving notice to the other parties?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There was no, this idea that I had this surreptitious conflict with the judge.
I'm assuming good faith is your part, but what's the basis for saying you can present an order without giving notice to the other side, and the court can sign it without giving notice to a party?
This was not an order that changed anything. It did not ask for any new relief. It did not do anything other than tell the sheriff, okay, it's time to go on the judgment I previously rendered. It is exactly the same as an execution.
And I understand your argument that you're saying it didn't change the result, but you said yourself the sheriff couldn't sell it without an order. So this order was important. It was necessary to trigger the sale. That's an event that occurs in the case that's essential to what happened later, the sale. Why would it not be required that the other side receive notice of this?
Because he had notice that the property was going to be sold, and he had notice when it came down. It's exactly like the Plant case. I mean, they just didn't bother to exercise any jurisdiction. When you file a garnishment or an execution, you don't notice that up for hearing. You file it, and an order is entered saying.
You don't give the other side notice that you filed
no,
an execution.
No, you don't. No,
and
you
the
don't.
Reason for that is because you don't want them to pull all their money out of a bank account or do something.
That's one reason. Yes, yes, and it's not asking for any new relief. In this case, the parties knew it was going to be sold. They knew the mandate came down. You know, this case has been kicked around for 4.5 years, and if you look at the various docket entries, basically it's been delay after delay after delay on the part of the appellant. It's now over 4 years that my client has been waiting for justice in
this case. So how does a person in appellant's shoes ever know when the date of the sale is going to be? Is there a responsibility on the appellant, or how do they ever become notified of that?
Absolutely, there's a responsibility. Counsel knew the sale was going to take place once the mandate came down. We even had that conversation. And, you know, the fact that he didn't bother to check or look for anything is exactly what happened in the Plant case. And basically, the court said you had notice of the order of sale because it was in the court's original judgment. You know, in this case, he had a second notice when the Court of Appeals dismissed his appeal and he had a mandate.
But how do they know the date? How does an appellate ever find out the date?
You would have to look at the notice and look at the...
But you said the notice, the order that is signed by the judge that goes to the sheriff had no date in it.
Correct.
Right. So the date appears in what document?
The court, it appears in the notice that is published in accordance with Rule 96 on four separate times over...
The publication notice.
Yes, the publication notice. In this case, there has been no argument by the appellant that the order changed anything, asked for anything different.
I understand that the sheriff didn't want to, but could the sheriff have gone ahead and conducted the sale on the authority of the original order once it had been affirmed in the mandate issue?
Well, he needs something telling him that, and that's all that was sent to him. Okay. I mean, I called and I said, you know, what do you need? And he said, we need that to come up here and, you know, an order that says what it says. And I handed it to the clerk the same as I would an execution or garnishment. And said, do you need anything else? And they said, no. Now here I stand with my client, you know, again, 4.5 years out.
But orders of publication are time-honored vehicles for notifying the public. I mean, divorces are granted orders of publication. People are evicted, thrown out of their houses on orders of publication. That's the system we have. And if there's an order of publication, it's assumed that people somehow find that.
It is, and that's what I said. That's what the Plant case addressed,
But my questions were, and of course that is true to members of the public, but this is a party, not a member of the public. Parties don't normally find out what happens in their case by publication notice.
the parties normally find out what parties find out by their attorney exercising diligence and doing what they should.
Well, like this said, order wasn't even in the file. How would they have known? What was reflected in the docket entries?
The docket entries were basically that an order went to the sheriff. And a copy had been sent. And we don't know whether it was or not, because there was never any record where the clerk was asked whether she...
Opposing counsel says the original order's not in there. It was only what the sheriff returned.
I'm assuming that... I don't know. My guess would be the original signed document went to the sheriff.
So how would they know what... But, I mean, what would have been in the record had he looked if this wasn't reflected in anything?
The minute entry.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a minute entry.
In a foreclosure of a deed of trust in an extrajudicial proceeding, is it notice of the date provided to the property owner?
I'm sorry.
In a foreclosure on a deed of trust, an extrajudicial proceeding, isn't notice provided to the property owner of the date of the sale?
I believe so. I'm not an expert in foreclosures, but again, this notice would have had the notice that was published had that in it. The order that went to the sheriff did not.
Why did you not send a copy?
Specific laws on foreclosure that govern those things.
This case has been going on for 4.5 years. Why did you not send a copy of the order to your opposing party?
Because I didn't think it was necessary. Again, to me, this was the judge entered the order. We talked about the fact it was going to get sold. There was no reason to do that. You know, the sheriff said, send me something that says what the judgment says, so I can proceed. And again, there was no meeting with the judge. There was no order. I mean, order is almost a misnomer, although that's what it was called, because, again, it didn't change anything. It didn't offer any new relief to anyone. And, it was basically a ministerial act on the part of the judge signing it and sending it up.
Did you put CC counsel on the draft order, or was that added by the judge or the clerk?
I don't know. I did not. I did not. So, we have no record as to who did what after that.
Can you address the $10 sale price, please?
Yes, I can. This matter was published 4 weeks. In St. Louis County, anytime you have a judicial sale, there are frequently numerous speculators who are willing to buy things. In this case, no one thought this property was worth bidding on. My client did bid, and $10, I'm not sure what she should have done if she was the only bidder. You know, basically what the court's being asked to do is to say how much is okay, and that seemed to be very dangerous territory.
Is there any record of anyone else showing up at this sale or anyone else offering a dollar bid? Is there any record of that at all?
No. Obviously, if there had been a higher dollar bid, the sale would have been... the highest bidder.
How many sales were made this particular day?
How many sales were made?
Were there other properties sold?
There were. I couldn't tell you how many. I couldn't tell you how many.
Can you address the cases? And our cases certainly say, you know, something's going to go for a smaller percent of its market value when it's sold in the sheriff's sale. But they also say at some point the consideration is so low that in itself is a basis to cancel the transaction. Because especially where here it's sold to an interested party, not a third party.
Thank you. Judge, I can't find any case where a court set aside a sale on that basis. There is dicta in some of the cases that have comments like that. But
do you have any cases that they have a $10 sales price?
No. The closest one is the Swift case. In that case, there was a property that the wife and husband, it's a long story, but basically the wife had almost previous to the sale, taken out a $97,000 loan. So we know it was that. What happened was it was foreclosed and the bank bought it back for $91,000. And the husband said, no, I have a half interest. There was a partition sale ordered, and basically the party bought it for $1,000. So a $100,000 house basically went for $1,000. And that was approved in SWIP. The Borchers case, the Jefferson County case I cited, all say that a low price is a matter of concern, but it's not enough. It's not enough. There has to be some unfairness in the sale. There has to be some evidence of fraud. There has to be
Well, but why is there
plus a low price?
Counsel Weiser v. Leonard, Missouri Supreme Court, 1953, says, it's the one I quoted earlier, it says, there's an exception to the rule that you don't set it aside for mere inadequacy. Inadequacy of consideration, if it be so gross in nature as to amount in itself to conclusive and decisive evidence of fraud, is a ground for canceling a transaction. In such cases, the relief is granted not on the ground of inadequacy of consideration, but for the ground of fraud as evidenced thereby. So that amount itself, where it's de minimis, like the $10, can itself, this case says, be evidence of fraud not sufficient to set it aside.
Well, and I would argue, Judge, that later cases basically say that that there has to be some other evidence. Should the price be Borchers says would the price be inadequate, and there be circumstances attending the sale causing such inadequacy, the court can set it aside.
And of course, opposing counsel says circumstances are that they didn't get notice.
Well,
it was sold to an interested party.
Yeah, that didn't. What caused the inadequacy, if he would have shown up and made a higher bid, I suppose, was
right.
His lack of diligence and finding and paying attention to what was going on when he knew good and well it was going to be sold. Again, this has basically been the history of this case. It's delay, 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 and I don't do stuff, and then, I'm trying to get sympathy. And, my client, again, has been excluded from this house. The sister has been living there free. She paid nothing for this house. What her interest was a gift. All of those factors, I think, weigh in the respondent's favor. She, is an elderly lady. She's in ill health. I'm not sure if the sister's game is to run this out and hope that she doesn't survive all the court proceedings. It clearly is a problem, I think, for this court, because if you go...
Is there an appeal bond in this case?
No. We asked for one. It was never filed. I think I asked for $100,000. The other thing in this case is the $65,000. The value of this house wasn't an issue. This is a partition case, so it's do the parties own it, and do they agree, and can it be divided in kind? I think I asked my client her opinion as to the value. It's probably the stupidest question I've ever asked a client in 40 years of law practice, because I think that's where the $65,000 number came from. But again, we don't know what it would bring in a sale. Clearly the appellant has been unwilling to move, and I'm assuming that anybody who was considering this is a North St. Louis County property, bidding on that, realized they were going to be in for a long haul and a nasty battle if they purchased the property to try to get possession. They would consider what it would be, the condition they would get it. For whatever reason, the best evidence of the actual value at a judicial sale in this case is what was bid and the fact that no one else wanted the house.
Is Ms. Harden still in possession?
As far as I know. So, again...
Well, your point about the market value, that's why they sell the steps of the courthouse. I mean, there are people there watching for bargains, and then no one else even looked at the house to put any... I mean, it's generally like a whole bunch of houses, and it's a madhouse, and people are there to buy bargains, like a $1,000 house for $100,000 or whatever they can get on tax sales, and no one bid on this house except for...
No, and it wasn't inclement weather. It was, there was nothing we did wrong. And here my client stands in the Supreme Court still waiting for this case to be concluded. So.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
So what did you think was going to happen after the appellate decision, and all the, what do you think was going to happen next if it wasn't going to be selling the house?
The mandate would have been sent back to the court, and the court would have issued some type of directive that would have been sent to the parties.
What if opposing counsel would have just sent the mandate to the sheriff? Couldn't the sheriff have proceeded based on that mandate alone?
I believe the sheriff would not. In fact,
we don't know that, but legally, couldn't the sheriff have proceeded with the mandate? I mean, that's a final judgment from the highest court that heard the case.
I don't know, Judge. I'd have to research it. It wasn't a self-executing order.
Well, there's in the Court of Appeals opinion that says what the result
or
was.
Didn't they just dismiss the appeal, or what did they say?
The first appeal was dismissed, but the order from the trial court had various provisions in there. If the parties want to list it for sale with the real estate agent, if they want to do various things. And I'm sure the sheriff would not have taken that and say, well, this is a self-executing order, because I know all these conditions that the judge set forth in there have been met. I think he would get an order from the judge confirming that they hadn't gotten a real estate agent or they had done something. As Judge Wilson asked earlier, this wasn't a self-executing order. There were issues in the order. If this happens, then we'll do that. We'll do the other thing.
Right. Yeah.
And the sheriff wouldn't know. All he would have known is that the appeal was dismissed. In Plant, the parties knew that the court had ordered the sale and sent it to the sheriff. They just didn't know when it was going to happen, and the sheriff didn't notify them. This case isn't like Plant. We didn't know that the judge had sent an order at all. A big issue, getting an order from a judge is not ministerial. It's not like a garnishment or an execution. I think this court should draw a bright line. If a lawyer is going to a judge to get an order, you follow 5526 and 4301, give notice, get it in writing, and there's no question of whether it's ministerial or whatnot. The second issue, the $10 sale price. First off, after the sale, there's a confirmation of sale, Borchers versus Borchers. In fact, it states that confirmation of sale is within the discretion of the trial court, blah, blah, blah. Rule 92, when we have sales and there's a confirmation hearing, the purchaser would bring evidence saying that it was a reasonable value. In this case, the history of these cases, it seems like the person who didn't purchase it has to come in and say, no, that wasn't a fair value. I think in this case, an owner of the property, Nina Hardin, came in and said that wasn't a fair value. The issue has been presented. I think then it's incumbent on the other side to come in and show that the value was fair. Nina Hardin came in and said, it's unfair. I'm an owner of the property. $10 for $65,000 is not fair.
What about opposing counsel's argument that it's your client's fault that really it has a little value because of her obstructive behavior and refusing to bring this case forward and opposing everything that happened at every turn?
Oh, I think that's nonsense. First off, a $100,000 appeal bond and $65,000 value was established by her client, not mine. My client thinks it's worth more, but we'll use the $65,000 figure. My client and her mom, is their home. They live there. And what are we asking for? What relief are we asking for? Set aside the sale and have a new sale. That's what we're asking for. A partition is an equity exercise, equity, fairness. Set it aside, order a new sale. If Ms. Long buys it at the second sale after notice and everyone knows about it, fine. We're moving. Get a new house.
Thank you, counsel.
Your time is up. Thank you. Case will be submitted. Okay.